Remember to subscribe to our Zoom Catchers YouTube channel and follow us on our socials. Greetings and welcome to Season 2 of Conversations on Aging. I'm your host, Kimberly Gunn with Zoom Catchers. Thanks so much for watching, listening, and sharing our content and continuing to believe in the power of podcasting to make positive impacts on our world. This season, we have another lineup of great guests, many of them artists that are going to be sharing their aging journeys with us. Today, we're going to be talking with Julie Colas, who is an award-winning actor, dancer, singer, and all-around cool person, coming to us all the way from Auckland, New Zealand. Julie has appeared in numerous productions on stage and on the screen, including Slow Dating, written by Adam Zudrich, who is no stranger to the Zoom Catchers family. Slow Dating is a one-woman show all about seniors and speed dating, and a 2023 Sunny Coast Showdown winner. You know what we say, we're never too young to think about aging, so we're super excited to welcome Julie to the Zoom Catchers virtual studio. Julie, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you, Kimberly.
Thank you so much for being here. I know it's like a day ahead and 3 hours behind, so I'm kind of... I get a little confused.
Be very confusing for everybody. It's the same for me, yeah.
Awesome. So welcome to the Conversations on Aging. And I want to give a shout out to Adam Zudrich, who made this connection for us. We're super excited to have you on and to launch Season 2. It's all about artists and actors and dancers and musicians and so much more. So I'm just going to briefly introduce you. Tell us more about who you are and how did you get into acting?
Ooh, that's a big question. I was born in England. And then I emigrated to New Zealand. But if you asked my parents and my husband if I'd started being an actor at a set period, there's no time. I mean, when I was a small child, I was always the one up front wanting to dance and sing. And at school, I was always the one, put my hand up, can I tell a story? And I'd do some improv or whatever came into my mind. So I think I've always been a bit of an actor. When I became a teenager and I was thinking about careers and things, I'd been doing an awful lot of acting at school, but I was also spent a lot of time in the art room. And when it came to going to university, I think you probably call it college, there was no drama school in New Zealand back in the 70s, would you believe? So I decided to go to art school, where I got a degree in fine arts, and then went on to be a teacher, while at the same time I was still doing some acting class and things part-time. So I didn't get into professional acting until much later. My two children had been born. I had been teaching right through. And I just thought, damn it, I'm going to do it again. So I started off trying to get back into it, some classes and things like that.
Wow. That's great to hear because, you know, I know for a lot of people, they're like, how do people get into acting? How did you, you know, get your teeth cut, so to speak? So it's exciting to hear that. And I didn't know that part about your story. So thank you so much for sharing. And, you know, we are pursuing, you know, the aging process and how people are still acting and still out there doing their things. So tell us more about what you are currently involved in and how your career has manifested from when you first started in school to where you are now.
I guess you could say that one benefit about being this age is sort of settled into a pattern, really. I get invited to do projects, and I think that's because I have an IMDb page and a good page with my agent. So I've been invited to do a short film just this weekend, so we're off to do that this afternoon. And I get to play a character who's not quite as typecast as usual, in that she's an avid member of a bird watching group and she takes a younger woman under her wing, excuse the pun, and they become very good friends due to the activity of bird watching. So that's nice. You're getting mature roles that aren't always, you know, grandma at retirement village, which is often what happens in the commercial world.
It's just so great to see you out there still doing. I know you, right after this, right after we wrap here, you got, you know, this other gig. So it's great to see that you're active and still obviously doing it. I think for some artists, they have this idea of, oh my God, when I, you know, hit 50 or 60, it's over. So, you know, what kind of advice would you have for people that are at that place in their life where they're not sure if they want to continue, if there are going to be any roles available for them in their years?
Yeah. That's a very good question. I think one thing about being an artist and being an actor, because you are basically self-employed, so it's really up to you when you start and finish. And I think because of the type of work, you can adapt it, you're flexible, you are experienced, and you can adapt it to suit your lifestyle and how much you want to do. You can say no to a job if it's too scary, if they want you to do some stunts or something. You can always keep painting or making ceramic work as long as you're physically able. And that's the beautiful thing about it, that it's just entirely up to you, that you can keep going. And I think there's something about being older which gives you, I don't know, a little bit more of a relaxed attitude to your work. The pressure is not quite the same. If you're not having to support a young family or pay a mortgage, then you can really start to enjoy what you're doing. The pressure goes a bit.
You hear that, folks? You know, there's a lot of benefits to aging. And, you know, we lean into the positives aspects of that conversation as opposed to the gloom and doom. And, oh, my God, will I, you know, be able to do anything? So, you know, I appreciate you sharing that information. And, you know, I find it very inspiring to hear that, you know, because, like I said, I know in our country, we're here in the States, obviously, you know, a lot of actors are having a hard time even finding work, regardless of the age. It's a very competitive marketplace. And so I was wondering if you could just talk more about the landscape in New Zealand and how the market has been playing itself out for you there as an actor.
Well, I think we face a lot of the same challenges. Plus, we are located at the end of the world. We market ourselves as a fantastic location because we have, you know, a small country, but we still have desert and mountains and beach, coastline, and forests and everything. So we do try and encourage filmmakers from all over the world and commercial makers, for that matter, to come down and work here. But I think COVID and then all the strikes last year sort of upset the apple cart. And when you're making plans to go a long way away from home, something like that can be a big hurdle to overcome. So a lot of acting work has slowed down recently. Plus, we've got the same issue with television. The free-to-air television that we have here is feeling the challenge because they're not getting the commercial revenue that they were. So they've cut back a little bit on commercials. And of course, commercials and voiceovers are the bread and butter for a lot of actors. I mean, that's how you pay the bills. But I guess that's being older, there are still commercials for retirement villages and golf courses and things like that. So I'm fortunate like that. But yeah, you still have the same, you go for a lot of auditions, you see other people in the room who are a similar age group. And you know that, you know, competition is still pretty fierce.
Right. It is a competitive thing after all, right? Uh-huh. And, you know, somebody has to get chosen and someone hasn't. So are you mostly doing all kinds of projects, you know, voiceover work, commercials then? You can tell us more about that.
Yes. I try and keep it very broad and flexible. That's one of the differences about New Zealand from working in the USA. When I was in the US, I was encouraged to really focus on what was my niche and make sure that I worked hard towards that. And my manager and agents were looking for work which fit that niche very tightly. Whereas in New Zealand, you're expected to be very broad, to do as much work as you can, paid or not paid. I do quite a lot of theatre, which sometimes they're cooperative productions where you're not paid very much. You're doing it because you want to keep fit. You want to keep in the world so you can do your networking with other actors and directors, producers. But yeah, I guess that means that I have to be a jack of all trades.
The proverbial Jack or Jane of all trades, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have a preference for the kind of work that you do? Is it commercials, voiceover, stage, or on the screen?
I wouldn't do any of it if I didn't enjoy it, but I really do love being on stage. Having that connection with an audience is wonderful, and the immediate feedback, every performance, you know, is a go. You can't stop and improve things or change things. You just have to be prepared to improv if something happens. Every performance is a little bit different, which makes life very exciting for you and the other actors. So I think that probably is my first love, but I do love working for film and television. It's a slightly different beast, but still a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, and that leads me to my next question. We know you're from New Zealand, and you had a chance to come here to the States, and I would love to, you know, have you share that story, because it's so interesting to hear about your experiences here and what's happened and how that all ensued.
Okay. I hadn't actually even dreamt of going to Hollywood. Well, I suppose I had dreamt of it, but I hadn't thought of it as a real thing. Lots of the young actors, especially actors who are successful here, can take that success overseas to Australia or America. And I'd watched them go and thought my ship had sailed. But because of working with Adam Sudrich on the monologue that has really defined my late life career, we worked on this monologue. I was directed by a young woman here who picked it up, and we'd worked together on some children's theatre. And she said to me, "Hey, I found this really interesting project for an older woman. Would you be keen?" And I read it. I loved it. We worked really hard, and we went into a competition in New Zealand, and we won that. So we sent a video to Australia to Adam because we were very proud of our production. And he loved it too, and he invited us there to put it on for a showcase that he was doing in Australia. So I got to know Adam personally, and he is just a delightful young man. And he said to me, "How about we put this out there in the world and see what happens?" And so he put it out. He applied to a number of different sort of competitions, short monologue, short theatre piece festivals around the world. And we were invited by Short and Sweet Hollywood to go and put it on there. It's a competition. Where's our competition in New Zealand? Lasts for a week, and it also has some film. Over there, it was a good nearly 6 weeks of dance, short film, theatre, Hispanic theatre as well as American theatre, and visitors from overseas. So I went over, raised some funds. All my friends thought it was very exciting. And off we went, and we took part in this competition. And I won my heat, which was unbelievable. And then, of course, they said, "Can you come back in 6 weeks for the final?" And I did. I had to do a bit of fundraising around town to get up there and everything. It was all terribly exciting. The radio wanted to talk to me. TV wanted to talk to me. It was my moment in the spotlight. So we went back to Hollywood. And I won the overall theatre monologue section. And that's when I met Jill Lajay, who is Epic Talent Management. She came up to me after the show and she said, "Julie, are you represented in America?" And I said, "No." And she said, "Well, I would like to represent you. Can you think about a way you can get up here to live, and we'll work together, and I'm sure I can get you some work." And I didn't take it super seriously. I came back to New Zealand. I talked to my agent here. I said, "What do you think?" And he said, "Well, leave it with me. I'll do some homework. I'll find out a little bit about Michelle Lajay, and we'll go from there." And so he talked to her. He found out what a wonderful woman she is, that she's straight up and totally honest. It wasn't a sort of exotic scam that I might have fallen into. And that was the beginning of my trip to Hollywood. Yeah.
Wow. see, folks, not all of those pitches are scams. There's some there's some legitimate people out there offering real
yeah.
awesome. But then you had to, then there was a little bit of a curveball that was thrown, right, with the rest of that tale?
Well, two curveballs in a way. It took me a good 6 to 8 months and quite a lot of money to get a work visa. So we finally got the work visa. And so 2019, my husband and I, we shut up shop at home. We've got a big family home and a big studio. And we basically just closed it all down and we headed off to the US. And we had to set ourselves up there in an apartment, a new home, everything. And so things were going along really well. And 2019, I was working hard at class, at my American accent, at auditioning and so on. And I had just started to break through. I got a few parts that Michelle, my manager, was very excited about. And then COVID came along. Everything closed down in the new year, 2020. We sat there for a while. A lot of other young actors had to go home. They couldn't afford to stay in LA. All the agencies closed. All the production companies closed down. Disneyland shut. That was our signal. Maybe we better go home.
The money people are throwing in the towel. We better split, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. And it's just so interesting because, you know, obviously being here, we, you know, experienced that and knew people in the industry that were impacted, but they were from here. And so, you know, being from another country and having to navigate all that, I know must have been an extra, you know, layer of difficulty. And so, so you went back home and then decided to continue pursuing your acting career and dreams?
When we went home, we naively thought the pandemic was going to be over in 3 months or something. Everybody was very confident. We'll go home, we'll stay with our family. And a lot of people left Hollywood as well, went home, stayed with family. We had no option but to go. Our family was pressuring us to come home because we were having trouble getting medical insurance during this period in America because of our age. We have medical insurance in New Zealand, but our global travel insurance had run out. I couldn't get my SAG AFTRA insurance because I hadn't been working long enough. I couldn't get any private insurance. And we thought with the pandemic, there's a good chance we're going to get sick. So that was another major reason that we had to come home. We came home and then as the pandemic panned out, as it were, it was much longer. My work visa in Hollywood ran out. So it was pretty much pick up our tails and get back into life here. So yeah, every now and then I think about coming back up to the States, and if an opportunity presented itself, I'd come like a flash. We love LA. We had a ball. We made friends. We had a fantastic time. But at the moment, we're here.
Awesome. So you hear that, folks? You know, she's available. She'll come back out for the right role, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Awesome. Now I have to see if I can hear your American accent. Can you throw something out there for us?
Well, I used a little bit when I was talking about Michelle, but I haven't been doing my practice, so I'm not so good right now.
And then was it a New York or a Midwest or what type of accent are we talking about?
Well, here in New Zealand, we have this thing that they call Middle American. And so classes that you go to here for American accent, if you're going to work on an American production, is very standard American, which is sort of mid-California, I guess. So it wasn't until I got to America, Michelle said to me, hang on, you might have to do New York. You might have to do something more Southern. You might have to do Midwestern. And so I had enrolled with a very good voice coach up there and was working really hard. But that was one thing I found, I think, that might be one thing that older people find hard. I found it really hard work. Being British born, I can do a British dialect pretty easily, and I can probably do Irish and Scottish and Australian. But when it came to the American one, I had to really work at it. So for auditions, she was my tutor a lot.
I would love to hear you do a New York accent. That would, I'm sure, be fun.
I have to do some practice, some warm-up. So no, don't put me on the spot.
Maybe next time. Maybe when we have you back, we'll go through the various American accents, regional accents.
Yes.
Awesome. to, you know, talk a little bit more about, you know, the benefits that you have found from your acting career, just personally, professionally, as you navigated this terrain. I know just my own, I was doing some research, and there's several researchers out there that have actually studied acting, the benefits of acting on seniors in particular, not just viewing things on stage or in the movies, but also participating in it. It's a form of stress release, gets people to release emotions, have different emotional experiences. Tell us more about the benefits that it's had on you personally.
Absolutely. You're right. I think using a full emotional range during your acting is always good for your mental health, I think. You get to vent. You also get to explore things with other actors that you can't do in everyday life, I guess. But there's lots of other benefits too. You have to keep fit. I did a theatre production the Christmas before last, when I did have to do some stunts. I had to fall off a chair, and it was a little bit of slapstick comedy. And I had to be fit to be able to fall around without getting too bruised and battered and hurt my back. So going to yoga, we ride our bicycles out in the forest, we walk, we go to the gym, we swim, and I go to dance class and things like that. Dancing is especially good for keeping fit aerobically as well as flexibility. So from a mental health and a physical health, it's really, really good for you. Plus, all that memorizing of lines. I can be introduced to somebody and forget their name 5 minutes later, but I can remember a script. I mean, work that out. That's kind of bizarre, but it's true. So I think it's a bit like doing crosswords. It's really good for my brain as well.
Mm-hmm. You hear that, folks? So get out there, take those acting classes. Get on stage. It'll help with your physical well-being as well as your emotional and spiritual well-being, and help you remember some lines.
Yeah.
Awesome. So we're here with Julie Collis, and she's coming all the way from Auckland, New Zealand. Thank you so much for being here a day into the future and 3 hours behind. That's how I remember what time it is there. And I want to, you know, talk about the piece that I know that you're well known for, and that's slow dating and speed dating for seniors. It's hysterical. I really, really love that piece. And tell us more about that, and then we'll hear some excerpts from that.
Okay. Slow dating is, yeah, it's a poignant piece, but it's humorous as well. And I think that's pretty good philosophy for life. You know, if you can laugh at the bad times and laugh at the difficult times, you'll do well. It's about an elderly woman who is sort of enticed into a speed dating situation. She is going through a difficult time in her life. She approaches the speed dating very flippantly. It's sort of not a serious thing at all for her. She sees herself as perhaps a little bit above this sort of proceedings, or not really taking it very seriously. But anyway, she gets caught up in the event, and interesting things pursue after that. I shouldn't tell you anymore, because that will give away the punchline at the end.
Absolutely. So, you know, we would love to hear an excerpt from that. And
okay. Well, as chance would have it, I found myself passing by the event some weeks later, and curiosity got the better of me. So I go in for a little look-see. And it's filled with all these women, all primed and plucked and held together with Botox and spandex-controlled pants, all sitting cross-legged at these little tables with their skirts hitched up, just enough to show that their libido isn't incognito. And the men, not one under 80. Oh, struggling up from their chairs onto walking sticks and Zimmer frames. Oh dear, squinting so badly through their cataracts that they wander off to the wrong tables. Too deaf to hear the conversations they're having, and no memory to remember they sat with the same woman three times. Dear old Bob tells me all about his bladder infection.
Harold asked me if my hair was real. And Jim rolled his dentures around like he was sucking on gumballs. And as I sat there, pitying these sad, sad souls, all just wanting to feel less alone for a moment. And then I thought, you know what I would do if I were in charge of this speed dating? I'd run proceedings like one of those restaurant sushi trains. I'd put all the men on the conveyor belt and let the women pick out the ones that still smelt fresh. But the bell rings and the men move, and I hear the clickety-clackety of Gumball Jim coming back for a second bite. So I grab my handbag and stand, just as this gentleman sits down.
Awesome. I just love that piece. And that's just a little teaser. We won't reveal the whole piece. But there's, no. You know, hopefully people will get a chance to see that at some point, because there's a lot to unpack with that. And we were going to go into some more details about yes. that story, because I think for a lot of people, it'll resonate in dating, you know, dating in your golden years. There's yeah. some issues around dementia and elder care. So why don't you, you know, talk a little bit more about some of the other issues that the piece touches on that you didn't necessarily mention in that part of the monologue.
Of course. The monologue refers to her being a happily married woman, and she refers to her husband a number of times that they've been married for a long time and how much they love each other. But then during the events that continue, she actually does hook up with one of the gentlemen that she meets at speed dating. And so I am letting the punchline away. she feels a terrible guilt, and the audience is asked to think, you know, what's going on here? Why is she feeling so guilty? Why is she referring to her husband? And yet she turned up at the speed dating and she met this chap and they went off together. So it's a dilemma that she has found herself in, because it turns out that she's not a widow. Her husband's still very much alive. But unfortunately, he's in care. He's had dementia for some time. And she nursed him at home for a while, but then he went into care because she couldn't continue doing that. So you have this terrible situation that I think a lot of people probably find themselves in. A loved one probably no longer even recognizes them, but they still love them. They're still the same person. They're still flesh and blood, and they visit them every day and spend time with them. And yet a whole part of their life has gone, really, that they can't mourn like they could if this partner had died. They're in limbo. So what happens to their life? Does their life sort of hang in the balance? Or do they have to think about getting out there again? And this is where the speed dating thing came in. It was one way of perhaps an older person hooking up with a new partner, even if it's just for friendship, because the monologue touches on, you know, do you just want company? Do you just want to be less alone, less lonely, and spend time with somebody that you can enjoy their company and enjoy doing things together? You might want to play golf or tennis or go to the theatre or something together. But you, at the back of your mind, you always have this, am I cheating? Am I letting him down, my husband down? Am I doing something bad? And I think another part of that is, do your friends and family approve? Because they still know your husband is alive. They still love them and visit them and spend time with them. So how do they feel about you thinking, I still have a life, I still want to move forwards? So that just adds to the guilt and the complexity of the particular issue. And I think there's probably more people than we realize out there having to deal with these sorts of issues.
Mm-hmm. And thank you so much for reading that. If people get a chance to see that, hopefully it'll be or more screens, you know, for to check out. You know, it's a very interesting piece. You did a great job in that. It's a one woman monologue.
One woman show.
But it does touch on all those issues that you brought up. It's like so many people are dealing with elder care, taking care of a spouse or a family member. In this case, you know, spouse, someone that they were once intimate with. They're no longer able to be intimate in that way because of dementia, Alzheimer's, or for some people, it could be physical disabilities as well. But how do you, you know, navigate that and move forward and still find a way to have relationships that may be intimate without betraying somebody, maybe, right? Or without guilty, and you know, what are appropriate feelings? And this is one of the first pieces that I've seen that's actually addressed those issues in this kind of way.
Yeah, Adam is a superb writer. I mean, his words are beautifully written. But also he touches on a lot of these sorts of issues about relationships and how they work out over a period of time. And even though he doesn't really emphasize it, it's overtly thought about that older people are still sexually active and still interested in sex. And it's a very important part of your health and well-being. And even though our children might throw their hands up in horror at the very idea of it all. but it's true. And people do need to think about that, what happens in that respect as you get older.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, just this topic, it touches on a lot of different things. And I don't know if there's... if you have the show down in New Zealand, but here there's a show called the Golden Bachelor, and I'm not plugging the show necessarily, but it's, you know, the show that features, you know, people in their golden years still dating. And so,
okay. You know, I haven't seen that, but yeah, it'd be interesting.
more content about that, more pro-aging content, shall we call it. But yeah. There's, you know, a lot to unpack just with that topic. And how are older people handling that? Or are they talking about it with family members? Or are their children having any types of reactions? Or even in circles, you know, friends and things like that?
Yes, it does come up a little bit. I have a group of friends. We call ourselves Rent a Crowd because when we were young, we were always very lively and often invited to parties to sort of make sure it went with a swing. We met when our babies were all born. It started off as one of those groups of women supporting each other through childbirth and then babyhood. And we used to get together often over a coffee. And then we started getting together on a Friday night and we'd have a glass of wine. And it was very much, how were we dealing with sleepless nights and so on. So anyway, over the years, the babies grew and then it became, how are we dealing with the kids at school? How are we dealing with teenagers as well as our own career, going back to work as, you know, slightly older parents? And now we're all semi-retired and still friends. So the kids have grown up, moved away. They've all had their own children. So they have their issues that we can talk about. We can compare our photos of our beautiful grandchildren. But we can discuss other things than our children, and we do discuss our health. It's almost inevitable that we get together and, you know, who's been in hospital recently and for what reason. And
how are your knees holding up?
Yeah, exactly. Who's booked in for their knee replacement? Who's going to the physio or the chiropractor? And sexuality is a bit of about that too. It tends to be probably more talked about amongst women rather than the mixed group. But yeah, it has been, especially if we go away on holiday together, so we're all sharing a holiday home, then we get the opportunity to discuss activities in the bedroom or whatever. So yeah, we still talk about all that stuff and things that change with that, whether we need more lubrication, etc., which is a common thing. So yeah.
I love it because, you know, we're handling a couple of taboo subjects, aging and sex, and the combination of those two together. And I know for some people, they're like, oh my God, the thought of grandma having sex. I'm like, well, you know, we're still humans.
Yeah.
People are still having feelings. And I think it's just interesting. And for people that are watching or listening, if you have any experience or insight, please put a comment in the comment section.
Absolutely.
Any insights, any advice, Any recommendations on brands of products would be awesome too.
Yes.
But it does, because I've done some research on this topic. It does bring us up to the topic of dating tips for seniors. So there are organizations and agencies that offer up some dating tips. And some of my tips are coming from the National Council on Aging here in the state. And so I'm going to read off of a couple of them. And please feel free to comment or add on. So one of the things they say is to meet in public. So if you're meeting maybe someone for the first time, don't invite him or her to or them to your place or go to their place, but actually find a place to meet in public, obviously for safety reasons. Okay. They also say stick to your boundaries. So, you know, one of the advantages, and you talked about this earlier, of clocking all these years, hopefully you've gained some wisdom, right? And you kind of know what you want, you know what you don't want. And so they say, you know, stick to the boundaries that you have and things that make you feel comfortable as a person. And you should have a clear idea of that hopefully by now, right? They also say discuss intimacy up front. So whatever intimacy issues you have, what your needs are, maybe you want to move slow dating, you want to move a little slow. Maybe you want to move fast, right? But they say communicate those things early on. And they also say never give or send anyone money. So if someone's, you know, saying, I need 50 grand to have you invest in this deal. Like, no, so don't do that. And they say be patient. Things aren't going to necessarily blossom overnight. So be patient with yourself. You know, and if you feel that you need to take more time with the relationship, that is totally fine. And then they say practice safe senior dating online. So I don't know if you want to comment on any of those things. Or none of this. Or do you have any tips as well?
I think it's very good advice. And I think going out for a coffee or a glass of wine, not even a commitment to, you know, dinner or something, it's a really good start. And I don't think that changes whatever age you are. I think that's definitely a safety thing. And plus, you want to be honest and upfront, and you hope the other person you're meeting is going to be honest and upfront about, you know, what you're looking for in this relationship, this partnership. I think you're absolutely right. You can get advice from lots of other places, but really, most people have an inner voice that tells them when things are not going well or not quite right. And like you say, the thing about money, I know a lot of people fall into that, especially with online dating. Just send me some money to get me out of trouble or to lend me for a short while, and then they never get it back or hear from this person again. Plus, don't get on a plane and fly somewhere, you know, meet me in Honolulu, baby, we'll have a good time. I mean, yeah, protect yourself. And like you say, be patient with yourself and give yourself some leniency to take things at your own pace, definitely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also for people, you know, if they've got family members that who may object, it's like, maybe they should butt out and mind the business. I mean, if you're, you know, you're an adult, and if you have your faculty together and you feel like you're not being taken advantage of, it's like live a little, right? What was the line from the monologue? Your skirt was raised just enough to show that
your libido isn't incognito. I know it's one of my favorite lines.
Hey, if you still got those Tina Turner legs, get out there and make it happen for yourself. So.
Absolutely.
So those are just some dating tips that I found online. You know, we're having fun with it, but it is serious business. And for a lot of people, they're, you know, maybe they have lost a spouse or they've been divorced or they have X, Y, and Z reason why they still want to date. Just be safe, be smart. You know, if you've been living, you've clocked all these years to trust your inner self. And don't pick someone like that last person that you left. How's that? Go in a different direction.
That sounds good. Yeah.
Yeah. We're here with Julie Collins, and we're talking all about slow dating, speed dating for seniors, tips, acting, and so much more. Do you want to talk about just some of the trends that I've noticed, I know you've noticed too, pro-aging content?
I did a lot of research for this program.
And, you know, what I was surprised to learn was that the average age for A-list actors actually has risen over the past 20 years. Mm-hmm. And some of the big box office movies, they had the star with someone that was maybe in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s. So
yeah,
talk about that. And I think as we're as our societies are aging, we're probably going to see more pro aging content, more actors in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s still out there. So what are your thoughts about that?
Well, we all look to the Helen Mirrens and the Glenn Close and women like that who are real women and they're doing wonderful work and finding roles which really can stretch them and are not stereotypical. I think a lot of that is to do with working your own network. And this is something I learned a lot about when I was in the US, that you need to be involved right from the word go. So people are writing their own material or finding the book, and then they're looking at how can they produce this? How can they get a team around them that can put things together? And I do know that some of these pieces with older actors, that they're involved right from the very get-go in it. And I've picked up that tip when I was in the US and I had never thought of myself as a writer. I always thought, stick to your knitting and do what you do well. But everybody in Hollywood is busy writing screenplays or theatre pieces. And so I have been doing that. And so I'm currently starting to work on a new monologue, a little bit longer one. This time, the last one was 10 minutes long, so I'm really going to stretch the memory a bit more and try and do one a little bit longer. But you still have to do the networking that the young kids do to have to get into things. And I think people like the aforementioned Jamie Lee Curtis and people who already have an established name can sometimes use that. But for those of us that don't, it's a matter of searching for those niches, and they are there. I mean, that was one of the things that really interests me. Michelle, my manager, said there are parts coming up for older people, not always the main role, sometimes supporting, but they are real everyday folk who are of an age. Not everybody wants to watch the young and the glamorous. They want to watch real people. And so you'll laugh, but one of the things that was written into my contract was that I wasn't going to go out and have a facelift or fill my lips with Botox, that I would stay a natural woman. And so that was seen as an attractive thing for America, that they were looking for real people. And the diversity thing, where people of all genders, races, and ages were really actively being promoted. So that's a wonderful thing. It's a little bit slower in New Zealand, probably, when we're not quite there yet, but slowly getting there, I think.
Awesome. So you hear that, folks? Not everybody's looking for someone with Botox. And
yeah.
Nothing wrong with that, but
nothing wrong with those wrinkles. Nothing wrong with that gray hair. No, embrace it and love it.
Embrace and love it, yeah. What would you say to, you know, producers or content creators or screenwriters as far as writing more roles for aging people?
Absolutely.
What do you hope to see in that regard?
I would encourage them to look at your community that's around you and look at the people that make up that community. And they are a very diverse group. And so writing about a whole group of 20-somethings having a wonderful, glamorous time is, you know, has its limits. And it's the same with gender. I often talk to my agent here and say, let's run through the cast list of this new film or this new TV series, and we'll run through it. And it is, you know, 75% male at least, often more. And it is 75% people under the age of 40. And so I would say encourage people to look at real life and think about making your group a little bit more realistic. And I think that is happening in America and in England as well, in the UK. Their detective stories, the detective's not this young, glamorous thing in a miniskirt. She might be elderly and driving a Jeep. You know, it can be really varied.
It's like, I can play other roles other than someone's grandmother. I mean, really. Just
absolutely. Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that role, right? But...
No.
Awesome. It's so nice talking to you and hearing about your acting journey. and your experiences. And I do want to move into talking more about New Zealand, finding out more about your country. And we are talking about aging. And so I know we've had opportunities to talk offline about some of the cultural differences that may exist or similarities between how people perceive, you know, aging and how they're handling it. And also just issues, you know, around Social Security and pension and how those are being handled in your country. So I'd love to hear more about that.
Okay. We're very fortunate. At the age of 65, every single person is eligible to pick up the national superannuation. And it's not a huge amount of money, but it is enough to just live on. Most people try to have some savings in the bank, try to have maybe a property or something, so they have got a little bit extra if they want to travel and really enjoy themselves. But for those people who don't have those advantages, the National Super does make it possible to live a reasonably nice life. It's not means tested. It's open to everybody. I do know of a few very wealthy people who give it back. They say, we don't need this, we're fine, which is unusual. And I also know people who pay quite a high tax because they have investments, so they're in a higher tax bracket. So it might not be as much for them as it is for someone like myself who's in a pretty low tax bracket. So that does give older people freedom to have that as backup. It also means that if you move into a retirement village, it goes towards that care. So if you can afford to go into a nice retirement village, then that is used to pay some of your weekly expenditure. If you have nothing, you can go into more of a public care facility, which your superannuation pays for that. Your medication and everything is paid for. So we are extremely fortunate that people can age with some security, that they know that they have that backup. We also have the most wonderful healthcare system, in that everybody is covered by the healthcare system. So if you have no insurance, unlike America, where it can be very, very difficult, and I know a lot of people can get into debt over hospital care and accidents and so on, we have two things. We have accident compensation, which takes away the need for pursuing legally if something goes wrong. So if you have an accident at work or you fall over in the street and someone else is at fault, you were tripped or you fell on a wet tile or something like that, you go off to hospital and everything is paid for. You are looked after and you are completely cared for. So you don't need to sue the person who left the wet pavement or tripped you up or something like that to get the money back to pay for your care or for your insurance policy to pay for your care. So ACC takes away any of that liability, and it also covers things like recovery, you know, physiotherapy or whatever ongoing need you have. A lot of people do have insurance, private insurance. I have a private insurance policy, but I hardly use it because the public care system is so good. If I have an accident, I phone an ambulance and wish I'm in hospital and I'm being looked after. But if I wanted to have a hip replacement in my own time, then I would probably use my health insurance to look after me and get me in for my hip replacement in a private hospital when I want to do it. Whereas without that, I would go on a waiting list. It would still happen, and it would happen. It would be the same doctors looking after me, because the private specialists do their time in the national hospitals as well. So the care would be just as good, but I would just have to wait a bit longer for it. So coming home from the States at my age meant I still had my healthcare, my health cover, my insurance, my superannuation, and all those things in place, which were a little bit different when I was in America, and I felt a little bit uncertain about my financial future unless I got plenty of work, which I was hoping for. I don't know if that helps.
No, that helps a lot. And I was doing a little research. I want to just give some facts and figures. So New Zealand has a population of 5.25 million people. So there's like, you know, we have 400 million people. So there's a huge difference
there. It's a big difference.
It's a big difference. And also, New Zealand was the first country to institute a minimum wage policy, and also the first country to give women the right to vote. So there's a lot of interesting firsts there. Also, it's called the superannuation.
Superannuation. Yeah.
Superannuation fund is also considered a sovereign wealth fund, folks. So any people that are out there watching from our Treasury Department, get on it. Make sure that our pensions are backed up.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's just really, really interesting. I think for a lot of people, well, New Zealand is somewhere down there, wherever. And there's just obviously a lot going on in your country.
Yeah. We have one other thing that I probably should mention is a thing called KiwiSaver. And this was the Labor government, which is the equivalent of your Democratic government, instituted the Kiwi Fund. And every person at work or self-employed pays into this fund. Now, if you are employed and you pay in, say you put in $100 out of your pay packet, then your employer is obliged to match that. The government gave you $1,000 to set this up, and that fund goes into, and you can't touch that unless you are either 65 years old, and so by that stage you should have a nice little nest egg, or when you're buying your first home, you are allowed to apply to use the funds to deposit to buy your first home. And the Labor government set this up, and they made sure that the funds were invested very safely. You have the choice if you want to, whatever provider you wanted to do that, and if you wanted to be in a low risk or a high risk category. And my husband, we were self-employed, but we still decided to do it. So even though we didn't get a contribution from an employer, we still got the $1,000 to set us up. And then we were given, it gave us, I think, $500 a year tax incentive, so that when we got to 65, we had a little bit of a nest egg, and that was what actually financed our coming up to US and being able to set up and live up there for the time we were there without earning any money. So
awesome.
And that was a great thing.
Kiwi Fund.
It's called Kiwi Fund. Yeah. KiwiSaver.
KiwiSaver.
Yeah.
Love it. Love it.
Yeah.
It's just interesting to hear how, you know, other countries are handling these issues. I mean, more and more of us are going to be aging as far, and more, a larger percent of the population is going to be in need. So for all these people out there that do this kind of work, pay attention.
Yeah.
Some more research. Yeah. Figure out what else we can do here to help our seniors. Awesome. Julie, it has really been a pleasure to talk to you, to hear more about your journey and your life. I do want to, you know, ask you more about what you like to do outside of acting. What kinds of things do you like to do? I know I've seen you on your bike, and we got some great photos of you out there. I know that your country has some beautiful, beautiful places for you to explore. So tell us more about what kind of hobbies and fun things you like to do outside of acting.
Okay. We got back into cycling probably in our 50s. And we decided we didn't want to do road cycling because we didn't feel safe. So we do off-road trails. And New Zealand has a lot of off-road trails around the countryside. And some of them are in forests, you know, so there's a lot of this and this, which we're doing a little bit less as we get older. Some of them are down the sides of highways and through the countryside, and they're a lot flatter but very scenic. And we've recently moved into e-bikes now, so we have electric mountain bikes, so we can still get out there and do some of the forest trails, which is fabulous. We love that, and we love the physicality of it as well as enjoying the great outdoors. What else do we do? My husband and I are both artists. We had a large ceramic studio under our house. Now we live in an apartment, and we rent a little wee corner that's part of a ceramics teaching centre. So my husband's there today. He's got an exhibition coming up, so he's working on some pieces for that. I still go when I have time and spend a bit of time doing some clay work. I just got a commission overnight to do a lamp base for an occasional lamp, and I make the hand-built base for that and put in the electrical fittings for the client to then find their shade and do that. So that's a lot of fun. I enjoy that. I go to dance class and yoga and things like that, as I said. So yeah, life is pretty busy. I have a daughter that I really enjoy spending time with. We do a lot of things together. She comes bike riding with us and so on. We walk the dogs together. And I have a son in Japan, and we're traveling to Japan to visit our grandchildren up there. So I'm also spending quite a lot of time online trying to learn to speak some Japanese, which is not easy at my age, but I'm going to persevere. Yes, so life is pretty hectic.
Awesome. So it's great to see you're still out there. You're promoting great pro aging content and still doing what you need to do on the screen. So we love it. Yeah. And as far as your acting, what's next for you?
Well, after I do this short film, I have been doing some readings on a theatre project for later in the year. I have a play under my wing, which I'm thinking, shall I get into production? So I found the play, and it's a matter of taking the bull by the horns and do I find venue and actually produce and even direct this play. So that's a whole new area that I'm, and as I say, I'm writing my monologue. So I've got that to work on. I've got two people who are going to help me with that. So yeah, that's what I've got coming up in that way. And always auditioning, hoping for a little commercial to pop up now and then that will help the pay packet.
Awesome. So Julie's looking for work, everybody. If you got that cool role, the new detective series, you know.
Yeah. Awesome. Absolutely.
Any final words of wisdom for people that are still in the acting game and are getting up there in their years and are thinking about, oh, maybe I should throw in the towel. There's nothing for me. Any final thoughts about that?
Well, you know, it's not an easy business. You do have to be able to take rejection and keep on top of things. And I think if people find it too much, well, you know, they might find lots of other things they enjoy doing as much. But if you're still keen and interested, well, go for it. Just do it. You have the experience and the wisdom that a lot of young things don't have. And I always find that when I'm on set, some of the young things really like to, you know, ask you questions about what you're doing and how you find the industry after all these years. So you can share that wisdom. Go and talk to young groups at drama school and so on. It's always a wonderful thing to talk to some of the younger ones. So stay involved. Whatever it is that sparks your interest, just stay into it and do it.
Awesome. It has been such a pleasure to be talking to you on this Wednesday/Thursday.
Yeah.
18 hours ahead. Love it. Really appreciate your insights, and we wish you so much luck with the rest of your projects. Can't wait to see what you're doing next. And hopefully we can have you back on and tell us how things have progressed with those, your monologue and your directing and producing projects and your new detective series.
Yeah. Okay. We'll do that. That'd be great.
Awesome.
Thank you, Kimberly. This has been wonderful. I've thoroughly enjoyed myself.
Thank you. And thank you so much for joining us today for Conversations on Aging, Episode 6. And we'll see you next time.